And you are?
The name's Bond. James Bond.
That's right, because your geeky history lesson on James Bond, the Daniel Craig films, is now in session.
Hello and welcome to Geek History Lesson. I am Jason on Her Majesty's Secret Service Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. Welcome to your mind university because you have stumbled onto the podcast where we take one character or construct or James Bond from popular culture and teach you everything you need to know about them in about an hour. And today we are talking about the handsomest James Bond, Daniel Craig.
That is debatable, maybe. But yes, we are here to finish off our series. We began 2020 by talking through most of the James Bond films. Yes, we did skip one. And we did that in honor of No Time to Die, the Daniel Craig, the final entry in the Daniel Craig James Bond series, which at the time of this recording, we have not seen. And at the time of this recording, we don't know if it's actually going to make its April date yet. We still don't know.
They pushed it back like 6,000 times, but which is fine.
Hello, Mind University students. Yes, you did hear right. We just said in the podcast that we didn't know when No Time to Die is coming out. That's because we recorded this episode about a year ago when No Time to Die was being constantly delayed because our excitement for Daniel Craig could not wait. We could not wait for Sony to decide when to release this movie. Now, No Time to Die, of course, is coming out the week of this recording or in the past. If you're listening to this in the future, hello, future people. But I just wanted to make that clear in case we keep talking about all the times that the movie has been delayed. That's because we recorded this in 2020. But that doesn't mean that it's not going to still be enjoyable. All right, back to your regular scheduled podcast. Take it away, past Jason and past Ashley. But like Bond, we decided to wait for no man, including James Bond, and we have decided to talk about all of the Daniel Craig James Bond films with the exception of No Time to Die.
We've also technically not done an episode on two of the James Bonds.
Well, if you include David Niven, yes, that's correct.
Did we do Roger Moore?
That was the other one, yes, Ashley. We have not done Roger Moore.
Or George Lazenby.
Oh, we did not do George. So we technically have not done three.
Yeah, I wasn't counting David Niven.
You always have to count David Niven.
I don't want to say I love him because he was a bad man, but like David Niven is a great actor.
Yes.
But bad man. He does not count as a James Bond.
Technically he does.
He does not. It's not Ion.
Not to the Eon Productions.
Canon. No.
All right. Enough of this. It's time to get into talking about the Daniel Craig James Bond films. Obviously, there will be spoilers for every single one of these films.
Except No Time to Die, which we haven't seen.
Yes. And we're going to be talking about, you know, of course, things that worked, fun facts, trivia, all kinds of things like that. And if you have decided that this is not enough James Bond talk for you, don't forget you can go over to our Patreon over at patreon.com/Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N, immediately after this episode has aired, and you can hear us talk more about James Bond on our Patreon exclusive podcast, Geek History Lesson Extra. We also have Jason and Ashley's Excellent Adventures podcast over there. A Just League podcast is around over there. Might be coming soon, might be on, who knows. And all kinds of exclusive content, including getting to read our comic books early if you go over and support us on patreon.com/Jawin. Thank you so much to the super friends that do. All right, Ashley, we're going to talk about some Daniel Craig, some behind the scenes of James Bond before we talk about the first Daniel Craig film.
Okay.
Now, Pierce Brosnan,
mm-hmm.
Who is he, Ashley?
He is the GoldenEye James Bond.
That is correct.
He's the James Bond before Daniel Craig.
I also would have accepted the debonair man from Mamma Mia.
I will say this for Pierce Brosnan because I don't find him attractive as James Bond, but that man has aged very well. He's a very handsome older gentleman.
Some people also know him as Thomas Crown, but that's beside the point. So Pierce Brosnan had signed for four films when he was signed for GoldenEye, uh-huh, the very first, uh-huh, James Bond film. He fulfilled that contract with Die Another Day in 2002. And remember, we talked about Pierce Brosnan and Die Another Day, and we watched that movie, homeboy. So anyways.
Yeah, we did.
So Brosnan officially announced that he was stepping down in February of 2004.
And at one point, producer Michael G. Wilson claimed that over 200 names were being considered for his replacement, including one of the other top choices. There's two of them.
I know one of them for sure.
Well, let's talk about the first one. Mr. Superman himself, Henry Cavill, was considered as a replacement for Pierce Brosnan. Also, many people know this actor. He was just in The Boys season 2. Croatian actor Goran Visnjak, who is also from ER, was considered to be the James Bond. But in fact, a lot of people consider that Goran Visnjak was the front runner, but he had trouble mastering a fully flawless British accent.
There is also, and this may be anachronistic, but there is this idea that I've always heard floated around that an English actor has to play James Bond.
Yes.
And that's the reason why there's been no Americans. I knew this about Henry Cavill because I loved him since The Tudors. And there was a rumor for a long time he was called the unluckiest man in Hollywood because he was a runner-up for James Bond. And he lost to Brandon Routh, not as good an actor, not as good looking.
For Superman Returns,
yep. Which ultimately I think was a blessing.
It was a blessing.
Also, I will say this, I won't be shocked if Henry Cavill is announced as the next James Bond.
Well, save some of that because that's going to be a big thing we're going to talk about in the extra.
Ooh, cool.
So
I have theories.
Initially, to the casting of the franchise, they came upon the actor Daniel Craig, who had been, before this point, previously known for Road to Perdition.
Layer Cake.
And Layer Cake, which is a Matthew Vaughn movie, which I think is excellent.
You know who's in Layer Cake?
Colm Meaney, Chief O'Brien.
Heck, the greatest
Star Trek character of all time. Red alert, that is truth.
Also 8 billion other English actors that you've seen in a million things, but specifically Colin
Chief
Meaney,
O'Brien,
yes.
The best character in all of Star Trek.
He's playing a shoot-em-up gangsta in that. He's really good.
Actually, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
He's pretty good.
Everyone in the movie's pretty good. Also, Daniel Craig in that movie is much slimmer than he is as James Bond. Still very cut and very fit, but once you have seen him in Casino Royale, he looks like a baby in Layer Cake.
So the interesting thing is that I remember I watched Layer Cake, and that was the movie where I decided, oh, this guy's going to be a good Bond.
I remember...
because I only knew him from Road to Perdition.
I didn't know him from anything. I don't think I'd seen a James Bond movie yet when he was announced, but I remember everyone was mad because he was blonde.
He was blonde.
And then everyone was mad because they were like, he can't drive stick, which I don't know if that's true, but it's not hard to learn how to drive stick.
No. So initially, Daniel Craig rejected the part of James Bond as he felt that the series was settled into a standard formula and quite boring. And he changed his mind when he read the finished script for Casino Royale. Now, Ashley.
Yes.
Based on Layer Cake and Road to Perdition, you know, well, he was in lots of other stuff, but
he was, but those were his biggest star
vehicles.
Those were
his big things.
Yes.
Do you think he was a good choice? I'm talking about pre-2006 Daniel Craig. Do you think he was a good choice before even knowing that he's a great Bond? Because I think he is a great Bond.
Yes.
Do you think he was a good choice?
I do think he was. I actually think he is a perfect candidate for James Bond because I think
Listeners might know this. He is your favorite Bond, correct?
I've said that on everything. Yes. He's my favorite Bond. So take that bias into consideration, I suppose. And I know I just said that I think a very famous person should play James Bond, but I think you should cast James Bond the same way that you should cast Lord of the Rings characters, Harry Potter characters, superheroes.
Okay.
So I think getting a quote unquote unknown is your best move. Get somebody who you know is talented. He's great in those two movies. And several other things, who you know can hold it down, you know can learn lines, you know behaves well on camera, but somebody who will not outshine the role. And I think they did an excellent job with Daniel Craig. Now, I know that they intended Daniel Craig to fulfill his full contract well before this year. I know that MGM got eaten and went bust and movies were in limbo and this and that.
I guarantee you before 2020 happened, I guarantee you that they were hoping to have the new Bond film in 2023. And now I think that is impossible.
But I mean, even think about how much time there was because MGM went bust in between.
We're going to talk about that.
Yeah. But
we're going to talk about that.
They probably signed him thinking they'd have him for 8 years, maybe 10 years. Obviously, it's been much longer than
that. It's been much longer.
Yeah, but I think he
was. In terms of chronological time, I believe he holds the record as the second longest James Bond.
Yes, I think he would. I think he was a great choice for the time. I wouldn't have been surprised if Michael Fassbender was also in that mix as well, because he's kind of similar. It was similarly famous.
Well, let me ask you this. What is Daniel Craig, now you've watched all the Bond, you've seen all the different Bonds, with the exception of David Niven. What does Daniel Craig do that is different from other people that have played Bond.
Okay, Daniel Craig is the biggest man who's played Bond in terms of like how much he's bulked up.
Well, he's not the tallest.
He's not, but he's the biggest.
That's old George Lazenby.
Yeah, shockingly. and part of that is the contemporary beauty standard. Part of that is he became James Bond after we had superhero movies gaining popularity.
He's the buffest
like that.
James Bond.
He's huge.
Yeah.
And what I love about him, and I think why I also responded to Sean Connery's Bond, is I believe Daniel Craig could kill me with his bare hands. And to me, that is what James Bond is. James Bond
is very much
a hitman. James mm-hmm. Bond will get
he's
in,
an assassin.
Will get in a fight for fun. And in my opinion, that is what Pierce Brosnan and Roger Moore do not deliver on. So it's why I like them a little less. They're focusing on different aspects of the character, which are just as valid. Daniel Craig, to me, is the brings violence to James Bond.
I agree. And I always think that James Bond should feel dangerous. And we've talked about this several times before. And that is something that Daniel Craig does at the same time. But also, we have to be fair. I want to talk about what you think is lacking in his James Bond performance, because I'm going to tell you that sometimes I feel, especially some of the later movies, and we'll get into this, especially his last two, they tend to make his Bond dumb. And
to be
several
fair,
of the villains make note of how stupid James Bond is, which is not the case in previous iterations of James Bond.
I mean, M literally calls him a blunt instrument to his face.
Which implies that he's only good for his fists and nothing else.
I will say this, and again, this is my bias, this is my favorite actor to play James Bond to date. I don't need Bond to be smart.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need super spy James Bond. Like, I expect him obviously to be smart enough to carry out orders and create a cover and be covert, but I don't need him to be the smartest man in the room.
Okay, then
I believe Felix Leiter is smarter than James Bond.
Then I will reframe the question.
Sure.
What do you feel is lacking from Daniel Craig's James Bond performance that you think some of the other actors did better?
That is an interesting question.
Like even Connery, what do you think Connery does? Because you have said, I think before, even though Craig is the better, I think you've talked about
Connery's a close second for me.
Yeah. But I think we've,
okay.
I think we've talked about you and I don't know if we did it on this podcast or next year, where I think we kind of objectively agreed. Where we're like, I think it is Connery. Like, you can't beat Connery.
Yes. It's just your preference after that point. I also really like Dalton's Bond.
Timothy Dalton's really good.
And Dalton's Bond is proto Daniel Craig,
yes,
which you said to me for ages and ages, but Dalton's Bond is smarter than Craig's Bond.
Yes, he is.
As we see with License to Kill, like he's much smarter and more capable.
So is Connery's Bond.
Connery's Bond brings a, I don't think Daniel Craig's Bond is uncharming, but he is not as smooth as a lot of the other James Bonds. He's not as interested in fooling. He only really is smooth with characters he needs something from or the Bond girl.
Sure.
And most of my issues with Craig's Bond, and they are legion, lie with the writing. I think the writing on his character is wildly inconsistent. And I think we need to not marry him off.
Okay. So let's get into the first Daniel Craig movie, Casino Royale, which was released in 2006. It was directed by Martin Campbell, produced by, of course, the people we know. I don't know why I said that. It was written by Neil Purvis, Robert Wade, and Paul Haggis, based on a Casino Royale, the Ian Fleming book, for first Bond in a long time to be based on a book, sort of. It has a running time of 144 minutes. It had a budget of $150 million, and it made $606 million. It was a huge hit. The synopsis is Casino Royale takes place at the beginning of Bond's career as Agent 007 as he is earning his license to kill. The plot has Bond on an assignment to bankrupt terrorist financier Le Chiffre in a high-stakes poker game at the Casino Royale in Montenegro. So this is the poker James Bond movie.
Do you remember how many times you saw this movie in the theater?
Twice.
I saw this movie 3 times in the theater.
I saw it twice. If a Bond movie is good, I will see it twice in theaters because I've always been a big fan of Bond movies.
This is the movie that made me a fan of James Bond. This is the movie that made me seek out the books.
The movie I think it made all. I will say this.
This is to James Bond what Star Trek 09 is to Star Trek.
Yeah. Yes and no. Bond movies have always been huge hits. When a Bond movie hit, like, because GoldenEye was just this huge.
You're absolutely right. My dad and my brother definitely went to see all of those.
But I will say, and I think maybe we've noticed this because of social media, that this brought a lot of people, the reboot, because this is the reboot James Bond.
Yeah.
this brought a lot of people into James Bond that I don't think would have seen a James Bond movie otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
So again, we got to talk about this a little bit. This movie, I have a bunch of fun facts, but like there's a really interesting opening, the black and white opening that I think is kind of iconic.
It is iconic.
There is the sequence in Uganda where Bond is like,
it's Madagascar with the free running.
Oh yes, Uganda is where Lashif is. You first meet Lashif. Yes, it is Madagascar. It's to be honest with you, I would think still to this day probably the most famous parkour sequence ever captured on film.
It's the first place that I ever heard about free running or parkour, or whatever. However, it's the first time I had seen it like on that scale.
So what do you think this movie does very well? Let's talk about this. What are the strengths of this film, the very first Daniel Craig film?
Oh man. James Bond's hot in this one.
Something more substantial than that, please.
But I'll tell you why I mentioned that, because when he's very hot, but also this is the first movie that I think presents James Bond as sexual an object as his conquests. Because yes, he has the Bond girl. He's got Vesper Lynd. Yes, he has the wife who he seduces in the Caribbean who dies halfway through, who's riding on her horse on the beach and everything. But he is presented through the same lens as these women.
Sure.
And that is a very modern sensibility to bring to James Bond. I think this also brings... this is the movie that made James Bond movie films. Like, this doesn't just feel like a tentpole action movie. Mm-hmm. This feels like a spy drama. Even though there are big action scenes, they broke a world record doing this movie.
They did.
And everybody dies and everything. It also returns us to a truly excellent performance by the James Bond villain. Mads Mikkelsen, it's the first place that I was aware of him, rocks in this
movie.
So good in this movie. And I know he'd been around and he's been doing stuff in Europe forever and ever, but
I'm also gonna say that the supremely gorgeous Eva Green,
we love her, we've wanted her to be Catwoman forever,
one of the best Bond girls of all time as Vesper.
Absolutely. I remember watching this for the first time, I was like crushed that she wasn't really in love with him. Mm-hmm. That she was still doing it all for the ex-husband or fiance,
all for the money. No,
supposed to be.
So we got to talk about some of the negatives of this movie as well.
It's very long.
It's too long.
It's so long.
I'm sorry. The poker scenes are boring.
I do appreciate, unlike previous James Bond card scenes, because the poker playing is iconic
and
for James Bond.
The Baccarat playing is iconic for Bond. It was switched to Texas Hold'em due to the American audience.
Okay, then let me say this. Gambling is iconic for James
Bond. And I agree. I actually think at this time they were making this movie, watching like the World Series of poker was super huge. I understand. I think it's the right decision to change to poker,
mm-hmm.
because I agree American audiences would have not understood
Baccarat. And that's your
Baccarat.
Biggest market. Unless you're playing for the Asian market.
I can tell you this. There was a James Bond Game Boy game and that you had to play Baccarat to get through certain parts, and I cursed that game so many times. I still to this day don't know how to play Baccarat. I'm too dumb for that game. But anyways, I'm just not fancy enough for that game. But anyways, the poker scenes are just, to me, they dead stop what is otherwise a very engaging and different and exciting movie.
Okay. I have two thoughts on that.
Yeah.
My understanding as someone who doesn't play poker is that with the exception of one scene, the poker is pretty accurate.
There's one
where they basically call the wrong.
There's one
winner.
Outcome where they call the wrong winner. Yeah.
So I do appreciate that if we are going, they frame it all around the poker tournament, that we actually do get to see them.
Fair.
Because in a lot of previous James Bond gambling scenes, he comes in, he does one move, he wins, yep. He leaves, right? Like, we actually get to see the play.
The very first time we ever meet James Bond on film is at a Baccarat
game.
Yes,
it is. I also appreciate the fact that they're not just card games. We do use this as fodder for his relationship with Lashif, and you get to see him do... This is what actual espionage is.
Mm-hmm.
You sit around and stare at people.
Yeah,
and
you
so
watch
I,
people in
I
cars.
Appreciate that. Now, I do think we only needed maybe one or two scenes of it.
I agree.
And there are 185 of them. The guy who plays their dealer makes me laugh every time he shows up with his suspenders. Shout out to that guy. Mm-hmm. But you're right. The poker is very long.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Because I will say that I think if you were to ask me what is a good reboot?
Mm-hmm.
I would put Casino Royale as my answer. Either that or Star Trek 09.
Yep.
Because I think the excellent thing that Casino Royale, because I remember as a big James Bond fan before this movie,
Yeah.
I heard all they advertised this movie as the reboot of James Bond. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, I was scared because
you'd already lived through a reboot of James Bond.
Well, Goldeneye is a soft reboot, but it
still could be considered a reboot, though.
He still has Moneypenny. He still has M. He mm-hmm. still has the thing. The biggest change is Judi Dench's M. Mm-hmm. But to be honest with you, you could still track that in the continuity. This was a movie showing us James Bond getting his 007 status. And I think I probably speak for all James Bond fans of the 90s when we remembered the days of James Bond Jr., that terrible cartoon. And that was my first thought when I heard this. I was like, oh boy, we do not need James Bond Jr. We do not need James Bond Jr.
So you were apprehensive going into the movie?
I was
movie?
Very, very apprehensive going into this movie. The trust that this movie was that Martin Campbell had already given us a good James Bond movie. So mm-hmm. I was like, okay, he can do it again. And I was a big fan of The Mask of Zorro, which he also directed. But I would say this is a really good reboot. And it also serves as like a really good reboot, but also if you chronologically, thank you, put this before all the other movies, I'd buy it.
Yeah, it's not until a little later where they cross the streams yep. a bit too much.
Yeah. So are you ready for some fun facts?
Yeah.
Or is there any other things you would like to say about Casino Royale?
I love M in this. She's really good. I'm glad that they kept her.
I'm glad they kept her as well. No Q, no Moneypenny in this movie.
No, and I will say, don't think they're missed.
I don't think they're missed
and
either.
And I do like the modern casting of them, and we'll talk about it when we get to that movie.
Although there is that weird guy with the big gray mustache who shows up and injects Bond with the blood. And like I kind of thought
the
he was cute.
Chip, yeah.
Yeah, he's got a weird guy.
You could assume he's from Q Branch if nothing else.
100%.
I also like
M for mustache.
I also
he's the other M.
Like in this movie, I like how mean M is. This movie is pretty mean for a James Bond movie.
Yep.
Okay. Fun facts.
James Bond's alias in this movie was Arlington Beach. And his alias for Vesper Lynd was Stephanie Broadchest, which I think was very funny.
He goes, you'll be Stephanie Broadchest. She goes, I absolutely will not. He's like, you have to trust mm-hmm. me. I have the ledger.
The way that James Bond orders his first vodka martini is lifted directly from the James Bond novels.
Yes, I knew that.
Also, by the way, everybody, we're not hitting on every single piece of trivia. So, chill.
Yeah, all and right. If we missed your favorite one, you can share it with us respectfully.
Daniel Craig gained 20 pounds of muscle for this role. I think he's too bulky for
James Bond. He looks like he could rip you in half.
The car barrel roll stunt by the Aston Martin mm-hmm. DB5 broke the world record for the most barrel-assisted rolls with a cannon. A promotional leaflet used to promote this movie in Japan
mm-hmm.
headlined the 7 rules to receive your 00 status.
That's cool.
And the MI6 fan site has translated it to this. These are uh-huh. here are your steps.
I'm familiar with this site.
Number one, you don't fear death and you won't give in to torture.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you must have Olympic level shooting skills.
Mm-hmm.
Three, even if you double cross your own parents, you will never double cross the organization, mm-hmm. which I think is a cool rule. Four, you have knowledge that would surprise even a scholar and a sense of humor that would make a bad girl grin.
Oh my God.
Number five, you have the social ability of a lamb, but remain a lone wolf.
Oh, okay.
Six, you have the highest level of experience with alcohol, gambling, cars, and food.
Oh boy.
Seven, you can fall in love, but you can never love.
I do want to say as well, this movie has one of the most iconic torture scenes of all time in it.
Yes. Scratch my balls.
Yeah.
Yes. This is the first time, by the way, fun fact, as big James Bond fans here, this is the first time that Felix Leiter had returned to the James Bond
the
films.
The best Felix Leiter!
Since. When was the last time Felix Leiter appeared? Do you know? Do you
when he died.
What was the name of the film, Ashley?
License to Kill.
Correct! 1989.
Old man Felix Leiter. And then they replaced him with the greatest Felix Leiter, who is wasted in mm-hmm. future movies.
Sir Roger Moore. The third James Bond,
mm-hmm.
fourth, if you could include David Niven.
We don't.
was reportedly so impressed with Casino Royale, and I think this is the best old man endorsement of all
wait.
Time.
I can't wait.
He was reportedly so impressed with Casino Royale that he went out and bought a DVD of it.
I will say this. Roger Moore will never be my favorite James Bond, but he seemed like a nice man.
He seems like a classy, like a very nice man. Very classy man.
Yeah.
All right, now we're on to Quantum of Solace, the name that no one quite knows what it means. It was a 2008 film directed by Mark Forrester, written by Paul Haggis, Neil Purvis, and Robert Wade. It, of course, had a budget of $230 million, and it made $589 million. Not as much as Casino Royale, but pretty close.
Well, like Sir Roger Moore, I also purchased this movie on DVD.
I think I purchased this movie on Blu-ray. One of my first Blu-rays, I think. Anyways, basically this movie is a direct sequel to Casino Royale, ending moments after the previous film with Mr. White, and it deals with James Bond hunting down the organization Quantum, which is directly responsible for Vesper Lynn's death, the heroine of Casino Royale.
Arguably the villainess.
The first really direct sequel to a James Bond film. Really, it really is.
Yeah, and that's what's wrong with it.
So, Ashley, we gotta talk about some stuff of this movie before we get into it. This movie is directly affected by the writer's strike of 2007.
Yes, it is, but not in a good way. Like, mm-hmm. We saw some things that were affected by the writer's strike, and they came out stronger than ever before. This came out more watered down, pun intended, than ever before.
Paul Haggis said that he completed his script 2 hours before the WGA strike officially began. And then per the rules of the Writers Guild of America, the only people that could change the script after that point were the director or the actors. And Daniel Craig has said, he has said in a 2011 interview with Craig, "We had the bare bones of a script by the time of shooting. There was a writer's strike and there was nothing we can do. We could not employ a writer to finish it. I say to myself, I will never do that again for another movie, but who knows?" He was like, "It was me trying to rewrite scenes and I am not a writer."
Yes, and all the props in the world to him for admitting that and for knowing that.
He also went on to say that he and Forrester were the only ones allowed to trust to do it. And he was like, "We were stuffed." He was like, "We were too busy. We were doing so many other things." And he was like, "I think we got away with it, but barely." And he was like, "It was never meant to be as much of a sequel as it was." And he was like, "I think the thing that turned into a sequel was me and Mark Forrester on set."
I really appreciate that take.
Yes.
Because it's very honest. He's not trying to cover up anything. He's like, "It is what it is, man." That's what I don't like about this. Look, and we rewatched all
these. We're talking about what we like first, not right. Let's go with the likes first.
Great. Daniel Craig is great in this movie.
I'm going to say something that is going to make a lot of our listeners crazy.
Sure.
This is not the worst Daniel Craig James Bond film by a mile.
No, it's the boringest one, though.
I think that's arguable.
I do think because...
For the other boring James Bond film of Daniel Craig.
Because they were trying to fill space, this movie has a lot of chase scenes, a lot of fight scenes, and a lot of long shots.
Too many action scenes. That is the biggest
problem.
Let's talk about some of the stuff. Okay, sorry.
As a result of the same thing, it is also a very beautiful movie.
Yes. Okay, so
Daniel Craig and the Bond girl who they painted a white girl brown when they are walking through the desert looking for the compound, and the heat is rising and it's orange. Like, it is, this movie is beautiful.
I want to talk about that, something that I think, this is a beautiful looking film. Mark Forrester did a really good, the cinematographer deserves a shout out on Quantum of Solace, because the cinematography by Robert Schaefer is excellent. This doesn't look like a Bond film. This is shot like an indie film.
Yes.
There's a lot of interesting angles in it. I also really like that Mr. White carried over into this film. I will tell you this, I will, this, this is the reason why this escapes the likes before the hates. I like the idea of Quantum, but as a James Bond fan, the entire film I was screaming Spectre, Spectre, mm-hmm. Spectre. We'll get to Spectre.
Yeah.
But I like that because that is from the original Ian Fleming novel, Spectre.
Mm-hmm.
So I like all the Quantum stuff of this movie. I think going to South America is a great idea.
I agree.
I like that we see M a little bit more in this movie. I mean, there is a lot of stuff. I think there is more stuff in this movie that works then doesn't.
I think the opera scene is really cool.
The opera scene is probably the best scene in this entire film.
And it feels, again, very classic espionage. That is a thing that you would do. You would go to a major event and you would like look, make notes, check the names, do this. Like, it's cool. And ultimately does wind up blowing up at Bond's face, but there is the one moment where you think he's got them.
Yes.
Is very triumphant and very cool.
Well, also the other thing that I really like about this movie is that it's all about water. It's mm-hmm. not about oil, which is actually a little bit forward thinking that it's yes. about, like, you know, because everybody, the big mystery of the movie is that everybody thinks that the main villain is about oil, Dominic Green, but he's actually about water.
And the oil does come back. Like, that's how they murdered the Bond girl with my yep. favorite Bond girl name.
With a shout out back to Goldfinger.
Yeah. Yes. It's one of the meaner deaths of a Bond girl, I will say.
I will also say a positive part of this movie. We did not talk about him in Casino Royale, but Rene Mathis.
Yes, that great. He's amazing. He's always amazing in everything.
Up his name, Giancarlo Giannini.
What a great name.
That's a great name. He is a great actor. And I will say,
he's perfect for Bond movies too.
Because remember, James betrayed him in the first movie. Yes, and the fact that he still works. His death really works in this movie. It's actually
very
one of the,
sad.
Because they had to dump him. They had to put him in a dumpster.
Yep.
But this is like, this is almost Daniel Craig's License to Kill, because a lot of ways, is James Bond just being like, I just got to kill whoever killed Vesper.
I just feel like this movie is a puzzle where a third of it is missing.
I agree.
And the parts where you're starting to see the picture are really interesting and really good, but then you don't have the whole puzzle, so you just shoved Vesper's face into the rest of it.
All right, so now we can talk about the stuff that doesn't work. And to be honest with you, I think there's not as much stuff that doesn't work in here. And I know people are shouting, again, there's a worse James Bond film for Daniel Craig out there. I guarantee you. And we know because we rewatched these. Yep. And we rewatched this. It was so obvious that yep. the other one was the worst than this movie.
Yep.
Like, I remember we rewatched this one. You're like, oh, this is not as bad.
Especially it's just kind of boring.
Especially when you watch it back to back with Casino Royale.
Yeah.
It is. You're exactly right. It's unremarkable in a lot of moments.
And all of the issues are, I don't mind this dealing with the ramifications of the first movie. I don't mind bringing up Vesper because she's so great. But what I don't like is the whole movie is mired. The first and the final scene of this movie have to deal with Vesper. Quantum of Solace might as well be called Casino Royale Prologue. What's the episode? Epilogue.
It might as well be called Quantum of Vesper.
Yeah. And again, while I'm okay with dealing with that, especially if we're framing it as like she's the one true love of James Bond.
No, it's actually the Contessa.
It's not.
The Contessa.
I don't like that he's been married. It upsets me deeply.
I think the Contessa's going to be in No Time to Die.
I freaking hope not. That's all the stuff that doesn't work. And about every 30 to 45 minutes, you get another Vesper reference and you're like, oh yeah. And then the other thing about it that doesn't...
You're like, oh, she's not even in this movie.
Yeah. The other thing that's a big knock against it to me is the villain, because Dominic Green is not scary at all.
I
don't think he's a bad actor.
Well, I want to bring up the three things that I think, and that was a perfect segue. I think the three things that are the weaknesses of this movie, but they're weak, and I think without the writer's strike, they would have fixed these
problems.
This
movie would have been totally fine.
The villain, Dominic Green, sucks.
Yeah.
Flat out. He's not good. Especially when they gave us such a good villain like Le Chiffre.
Yeah.
They just gave us kind of French businessman.
Yeah. And the idea...
Unremarkable.
The idea of a businessman, your villain doesn't have to be able to go toe-to-toe with James Bond, but...
Or have a weird quirk.
Absolutely.
But this was not
this
enough.
This was not it. Exactly.
This was not enough.
Yeah.
If you're going to do... evil businessman.
He needs a hench person.
You need a hench person, but you also need to do something like what Mission Impossible 3 did with Philip Seymour Hoffman.
But also, Le Chiffre is arguably evil businessman.
But he has the scar and the bleeding
eye. Yeah.
So he has the James Bond trait.
He has the quirk, yeah.
You've seen Mission Impossible 3.
I have.
So Philip Seymour Hoffman is, I think, as equal to a supervillain, mm-hmm. and he's just a businessman.
Yeah.
There's really nothing that weird about him. So if you're going to do something like that, they got away with it because they upped the physical presence of the businessman.
Yeah.
The other thing is that none of the Bond girls work.
No.
And none of them are the equal of Vesper, who, as you said, we're constantly reminded about.
Or any other like excellent Bond girl, like the unfortunately named Pussy Galore, who is truly excellent.
And then the other thing that's not great is, you said, there are too many actions. And as we said,
the opening 30 minutes are like a car chase to a boat chase to a helicopter.
A run through the bulls.
Yeah. Like, it's literally three chase scenes in a row. And like, that's when I knew it was going to be not great.
Okay. So here are any other thoughts you want to say?
No. Go ahead.
Let's talk about some fun facts here. The meaning of the title, according to different sources, the governor character in the Ian Fleming short story of the same name defines as a precise figure defining the comfort, humanity, and fellow feeling required between two people for love to survive. If the quantum of solace is zero, then love is dead.
Okay.
Daniel Craig believes that the quantum of solace means Vesper.
Yes.
So there you go. Afterwards, Quantum was made the name of the organization introduced in Casino Royale. Craig noted the letter Q itself looked rather odd.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie marks the first time since... I'm going to give you a bit of a trivia question here, okay, Ashley. This is the first movie in a long time that Bond has not said Bond, James Bond. He does not say that anywhere in this movie. The line was shot for several scenes, but was completely cut out by director Mark Forster because the producers found it unnecessary. Ashley, what was the previous James Bond movie, going in chronologically back from Quantum of Solace?
It's got to be a Roger Moore movie.
That Bond did not say Bond, James Bond.
I think he says it in Dr. No.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got to... Wait, what? It's got to be a Roger Moore. Is it a movie I've seen?
Yes.
Okay. Oh boy. I'm going to get this wrong.
Just take a guess.
What's the one in Las Vegas?
Diamonds Are Forever?
That one. It's not that one.
You're close. Incorrect. It's You Only Live Twice in 1967.
Only Live Twice.
Yep.
That's a great movie with a lot of unfortunate casting.
From
in it.
Russia with Love, Thunderball, Quantum of Solace, and You Only Live Twice are the movies where he does not say Bond, James Bond.
I've seen Thunderball. Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
With the use of the original Ian Fleming James Bond story for this title, there now remains only four original Fleming titles that have not been used: The Property of a Lady, The Hildebrand Rarity, Resicchio, and 007 in New York.
Resicchio is always the one that people think it's going to be when we know nothing about it, because it's a very popular story.
They use Resicchio as the code name. They've done it several times.
Okay, listen to me, Eon. You have to make James Bond in New York.
Yep.
It writes itself. It would be so easy. Mm-hmm. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Yep. I mean, obviously don't call it that. We've
call
said,
it that.
Have a character shout out like, oh, 007 in New York. Oh.
Yeah.
This is the first James Bond film in the entire franchise that has no gun barrel at the start of the movie.
Yeah, that's how you knew it was going to be bad.
This is the first to use it at the end of the movie. This is also the first movie where we see Daniel Craig perform the gun barrel walk, because in Casino Royale it wasn't the same. Also, this is the first to show Bond wearing a business suit instead of a tuxedo since The Man with the Golden Gun in the barrel sequence.
Okay.
Hey, man, there's like 25 Bond films.
You want trivia?
I'm giving you trivia. If you don't want it, I'll cut it.
No, it just seems
Do you want the
silly.
Trivia, Ashley?
I want James Bond in an orange suit.
You want him in an orange suit, like the Kingsman?
Yeah.
All right.
I know Craig will look great in an orange suit.
Time to move on to And the Sky Falls.
My favorite James Bond
These
movie.
Lyrics, they don't make any sense, but the song is pretty.
The song is great.
It is pretty, but those lyrics make no sense.
I don't know if Adele wrote this song or not, but I like to imagine that she got the gig, went into a studio, sang whatever she wanted, and that's the song.
It was written by Adele.
Oh, there you go.
Yep.
We love Adele.
We're going to Skyfall 2012, directed by Sam Mendes, written by Neil Purvis, Robert Wade, and John Logan. John Logan should be very familiar to Geekers Lesson listeners because he is the man that wrote Gladiator.
Woo!
And won an Oscar for doing it. The budget for this movie was $200 million, and it made $1.1 billion.
And you can thank Tumblr for that.
Why Tumblr?
Tumblr loves, loved RIP Tumblr.
It's this, still around.
Not really, though.
I don't think it's gone anywhere.
It lost, I know, a lot of its membership once it cut its adult content.
The synopsis of this film is that James Bond is shot, he fakes retires, and he goes through a cat and mouse game where Raul Silva wants to kill M. Because James Bond and Raul Silva are fighting about who is their mommy.
He's played by my mom's boyfriend,
yes,
Javier Bardem.
I did go through a lot
of that. My mom doesn't date Javier Bardem. Them, but if you would like to, I can hook you up.
We're going to talk a little bit about the production of this movie, because this was, you're talking about MGM going through. Production,
yes,
of Skyfall was suspended throughout 2010, because Quantum of Solace was 2008, because MGM financials had financial troubles. Pre-production resumed following MGM's exit from bankruptcy on the 21st of December 2010, and the film was officially given the release date on 2012. It was intended to be part of the year-long celebration celebrating the 50th mm-hmm. anniversary of Dr. No, and we got a bunch of other fun facts about that, but let's talk about the movie first. So this is a movie that I consider to be the first film in the James Bond franchise. And I mean, this movie, this was one of the first movies. This is like Dark Knight, Christopher Nolan's Dark
yes.
Knight,
mm-hmm.
where you see this movie and you're like, I don't care that it's a genre film. This is like one of the best films of the year.
Mm-hmm.
This is solid.
And it's not perfect, but
it is not perfect.
It's a good, I love this. Mm-hmm. This is one of those movies.
This is your favorite Bond film,
this is my
right?
favorite Bond film.
Yep.
You could ask me any day, anytime, anywhere in Canada. That's a deep cut old cable reference for my Canadians. I would watch this like at the drop of a hat.
This to me very much seems like the Wrath of Khan for James Bond. And what I mean by that is that if you watch Wrath of Khan, the theme of Wrath of Khan is James Kirk, another James.
Yeah.
Captain James Kirk getting old.
Yes.
The theme of this movie is James Bond too old to be James Bond?
Can I tell you why I think that makes this so entertaining to watch?
Go ahead.
The theme of this movie is also James Bond is tired.
James Bond is old.
And I feel like there is so much. I don't think Daniel Craig has any subtext in this movie. I don't think Daniel Craig was excited to make this movie. I think Daniel Craig was annoyed the whole time he was on set, which is why he spoke the way he spoke afterward.
This is not the movie that he did that.
No, it was Spectre. But I know he got injured on this set. So I feel like this movie is also a lot of Daniel Craig being like, I'm too old to play James Bond.
Well, let's talk about this movie has an amazing opening sequence where James Bond gets shot,
yep.
and we meet the character that we don't know till later is Moneypenny, which mm-hmm. I love her introduction.
Eve.
We got to talk about this. This is the James Bond movie where M appears the most, played by Judi Dench. This is also mm-hmm. Judi Dench's final role as M, because she's killed. And we meet the character Gareth Mallory, played by Ralph Fiennes, who becomes the new M. What did you think about this weird... This is the first time that we've seen the transition of M's. They mm-hmm. just recast them mm-hmm. in the past and didn't say anything. But I will tell you this. I think Judi Dench, because of this movie, is now the most iconic M. I think mm-hmm. she tops the original M, Bernard Lee.
Who's also great.
But what did you think about a big part of this movie is about we're getting a new M?
Yeah, I kind of wish I hadn't known that going into the movie, but we knew going into the movie
it was going to be Ralph
Fiennes. It was going to be yep. Judy. Well, we didn't know that, but we knew it was going to be Judi Dench's
final movie.
Yep. Her vision is not as good. She has a harder time reading scripts, so mm-hmm. she's not acting as much anymore.
How old do you think she was when she filmed this movie?
85.
77.
Okay.
Yep. And it was her seventh time in the James Bond movie.
Yeah. I love Judi Dench's M.
Actually, she's going to be in one more.
Yes.
Because she's in Spectre.
I knew from jump, from the minute we met him, that Ralph Fiennes would be the new M.
Yeah. I did too.
I love Ralph Fiennes. I think he kicks butt in this movie. I really like that they show us that he is a capable field agent, because that is a criticism that has been lobbed at M across James Bond history.
Multiple James Bond movies.
Is that they sit behind a desk. Like, we prove here in a scene that I think is silly that Mallory will do the thing. Mallory can shoot a gun, can work in the field, is capable. And that's the only reason that scene exists, in my opinion. However, part of me wishes that after Judi Dench and I caught arguably the best M of all time to this point. I wish we had gotten anyone but a white guy.
I understand that, but you can tell, I'm going
to
say two
things.
You
can tell they were trying to return to form with this movie, which is why we have Moneypenny and why we have Q.
Yes, I was going to say that.
I apologize.
Ralph Fiennes is very much a product of modern movie making as him being M. And I say that because they made sure that the audience knew that M was a kick-ass dude.
Yeah.
Who could carry a gun, because we can't have an M who would sleep behind the wheel. Like, no, we need an M that can be in action scenes, which is what they do in the next movie, which is weird.
Yeah.
And then
Ralph Fiennes would have been a great James
also,
Bond
Ralph,
in his heyday.
Ralph Fiennes, at the time of this movie, is the biggest star actor they have ever cast in a supporting role.
He's coming off Harry Potter.
Yes.
He's coming off The Reader, where he, I believe, was nominated for an Oscar.
We got to realize this is Ralph Fiennes post English Patient, Oscar winning. Like, I mean, I know that was 15 years earlier, but
still,
this is Oscar nominated Ralph Fiennes. Judi Dench, while known, was not known to America.
Yes.
In the time of GoldenEye.
Also, Ralph Fiennes, aging very well, very distinguished looking older gentleman as well.
I think he's a great choice because, as you said, like in that final scene, you can tell that Sam Mendes is kind of a classicist when it comes to James Bond.
Yeah.
Because they almost reset the franchise back to where it was in Dr. No.
And I think that is another reason why people responded to this film, because we like Casino Royale and it's fresh and new and different, but like this takes all the best things about Casino Royale and gives us everything we love about a James Bond movie.
This movie is a weird ending yet.
And beginning and
also,
rebirth.
Also another, almost a weird reboot of the James Bond. It's the same movie.
Yeah.
This movie, the entire movie, you think James Bond is going to retire. And then at the ending, when he's like, with pleasure, M.
Yeah.
With pleasure.
Yeah.
You think, that was not a bad Daniel Craig.
It was pretty good.
With pleasure, M. With pleasure.
Yeah, all you have to do is sound kind of annoyed.
He goes down. He always goes down on the bottom of his, at the end of his words. Because I've heard other people say that, like, if you're doing a weird chronology of James Bond, you do Casino Royale, Quantum of Solace, Dr. No,
and then
Russia with Love, Skyfall, Goldfinger, and then the rest of the franchise.
Yeah. I've also seen people do it where Skyfall's the last one.
I've seen that too.
Which is why I don't.
It's a nice goodbye.
Jason and I have discussed this ad nauseum on the podcast by this point. I think they're all James. I think it's one guy.
I do too.
And I just think that you just shouldn't worry too much about the continuity.
Ashley, let's talk about Raul Silva, excuse me. I keep adding the extra. Played by Javier Bardem. Also an ex-MI6 agent. Almost kind of like, remember, Trevelyne. Sean Bean.
Yeah.
006. This is
handsome as hell.
You have to assume that Javier Bardem was a 00.
Yes. In my headcanon, he was there when Alec was there.
Oh, okay.
In my headcanon, I have a very extensive James Bond headcanon.
So Silva, Alec, and James Bond all knew each other.
No,
although it seems
James Bond has no idea who he was. So I imagine that Alec has been there for a few years before James gets there.
Okay.
So Alec is the one who overlaps the both of them.
Okay, interesting.
I think Silva left before Bond got there, but maybe like a year or a couple years before Bond got
there. I think Javier Bardem kills, pun intended, this part. I think he's excellent. I love the relationship he has with M. Although this, before we get into
it's a little
negatives,
convoluted.
This is the classic.
Yeah.
In the early 2010s,
Sherlock does this too.
And so does the Avengers.
Yep.
Every villain's plan was to get caught so that the heroes would.
It's Jason's favorite trope of all time.
I'm going to get caught by the heroes because they would never
expect that. You screamed about this when Moriarty did it. You screamed about this when Loki did it. Yeah.
Because if you deconstruct this movie,
it's way too convenient.
Silva's grand plot is to get caught by James Bond.
To hit him with a train.
So that he can run through the subway to get to this hearing that only happens because he blew up the building in the beginning so that he could shoot him with a gun in the face. That's his master plan.
Well, you know, criminals are stupid.
It's a pretty dumb plan.
Yes.
And to be honest with you, that is the middle part of this movie because I love the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
I love basically my least favorite part of this movie is when Silva is caught, because I love the end
in
Scotland.
The firefight is great. Yeah.
Everything in Scotland's awesome, and everything pre the island
The trial is
great as well.
I do want to say, Everything on the island, yeah, is great.
Mm-hmm. And everything in Scotland's great.
I do want to say that I think Javier Bardem, and it's a lot, it is a one-take shot.
Oh, his introduction, the rats, the
monologue,
story of the rats.
Yeah. And then they eat the rats. Can't do his accent, sorry.
Boop, boop, boop.
Yeah, my grandmother had an island. It was much like this island. Nothing special, but we loved it.
Let me see if I can find it.
Is one of, if not the best, James Bond villain monologues of all time.
It is the best monologue.
Javier Bardem is up there among the best casting choices for James Bond villains. I, to this day, cannot watch the scene where he takes his mouthpiece out. It creeps me out. And my favorite part is I love that he hits on James Bond and is like, oh, your first time, Ms. Bond? And then James goes, what makes you think it would be my first time?
Hello, James.
I think I brought this up on a podcast on the podcast before, but I love that because you would be foolish to think that as a 00, you wouldn't be open to sleeping with men and women. And it felt like such a modern choice and such
Who said it's the first time?
Exactly. And yeah. Such a step forward for James Bond in and look, I have issues with James Bond, the character with James Bond, the franchise, with actors who play James Bond, because it is so hyper-masculine. And I was like, that's so cool.
There's a great line in that scene where I can't remember exactly what the line Silva says to Bond, where he goes, like, what is your special skill? And the line of dialogue where he goes, resurrection.
Trailer
it was
line.
In every trailer. It was such a, but for James Bond, perfect line.
Yeah.
Perfect.
But like you can sometimes when you watch a movie or even television, you're like, that's a trailer moment. And that is a trailer moment.
Before we move on and talk about some fun facts, do you want to talk about Ben Whishaw?
I was going to say, please, can we talk about
Q? Yeah, yeah.
Q is my favorite. I think Ben Whishaw is a special actor. I think he's really, really talented. Mm-hmm. And I think
and he was really hot around this time.
Yes, he was.
Yeah.
He's such a weird choice for Q.
He is a very weird choice, but I like that they went with somebody different than, oh God, I can't remember the original. Like we've praised him.
Oh,
the original
boy.
Q.
It's Damon something.
I cannot remember.
But yes, I love that they said we need a Q, but we're never going to outdo OG Q. So let's do
Desmond. It's Desmond something. Was it right? Was it right? Desmond Lewin.
Desmond Lewin.
Yes,
I was like, Lewis.
Never, but actually, it was actually in the last movie, it was John Cleese.
Yes. Not a good choice, in my opinion.
Not a good choice either.
And he technically plays R. He never plays Q on screen.
But I appreciate that they were like, we can never beat Desmond Lewin.
So we're going to do the opposite. We are going to get a relatively young gay actor. I don't know if Q is gay, but Ben Whishaw is very famously open.
I'd be fine with Q.
He's very famously gay.
I think Q is gay.
Yeah. Out is what I meant, not open. I love that. I love his introduction to James Bond. I love the scene.
In the scene in the portrait gallery.
Yeah, where he's like, I could do more from my bedroom in my pajamas before my first cup of Earl Grey than you can do in the field in a year. And then James Bond's like, well, but you need someone to pull the trigger. Like, it's such a great, because a lot of this movie too, which is a troubling trend of James Bond movies that was introduced to Pierce Brosnan, is are we past 00s? Is James Bond antiquated? And that scene, I think, is such a lovely microcosm of it. Also, I think this is Q's best outing in a movie. I don't think Q gets better than this.
He's pretty good in License to Kill, though.
No, I mean modern. I mean, oh, Ben Whishaw's
okay. Q. I was like, Desmond Lewin is in that movie a lot, and he's really good in it.
Also, the goodbye to him is like, his final scene is like,
always have an escape plan, 007.
Knowing that he passes away not that long after. Mm-hmm. It's really like mm-hmm.
Well, they
tragic
knew
and lovely.
He was retired. They knew yes. That was his last movie,
yeah.
Which it worked out because he actually died not that long after.
I don't think he saw the premiere of that movie.
Well, he died in a car crash.
Remember? Yes. Yeah. But I think this has been the best Ben Whishaw Q has ever been is in this movie.
Agreed, because he gets kind of dopey Inspector, and this will be a longer podcast because of that. Let's talk about some fun facts of Skyfall here. So Roger Deakins is
we
a
love,
cinematographer, Jarhead Revolutionary
why
War.
There's a shot in front of fire.
That's why there's a shot in somebody, a silhouette in fire. We have to talk about Kincaid. Now, Kincaid, played by the amazing character actor who's no longer with us, Albert Finney, was originally written
R.I.P.
for Sir Sean Connery in mind. Producers Barbara Broccoli and Michael G. Wilson originally wanted Connery to come out of retirement and make a surprise cameo. And even director Sam Mendes, he agreed with me that there was discussion way, way early on, but he's like, I always thought that was problematic because to me, it takes you out of the movie because Connery is Bond. And why would we bring him back as another character?
Because you're bringing him back as James Bond's only
No, I agree. I agree with Sam Mendes.
People can listen to us. Jason and I disagree on this point, passionately but respectfully. You can listen to us scream at each other about this on our extra for the Timothy Dalton, where we talk about should Timothy Dalton cameo in a James Bond movie?
Yes.
Because we devolve into the Sean Connery discussion. But it doesn't matter. Albert Finney's the one who took this part, and he's excellent in it. And I love that he hits on M and calls her Emma because he doesn't know that it's a code name.
I do too.
And I love that he doesn't know that James Bond can shoot.
Let's get into some real history that's brought up by this movie. That's very interesting. And I might say this word wrong.
That's fine.
I've never heard it before, so I'm just going to say it. There is an implication in this movie that Bond's ancestors were recusant Catholics.
Mm-hmm. You said it right.
Okay. When Kincaid shows M the secret escape passage in the chapel at the Bond ancestral state, he explains that it was originally a hiding place for priests.
It's a priest hole, yeah.
Which strongly refers to the long period in British history during which Catholicism was illegal and certain families continued to practice Catholicism and sheltered priests.
Particularly in Scotland, which was famously a Catholic country until Elizabeth I, my very favorite historical figure, cut off her cousin, Mary Queen of Scots' head.
I just thought that was a really cool, neat, kind of interesting real-world trivia that that James Bond is probably Catholic.
Well,
now.
Also his mother is French because her last name is, it's either Delacroix or Lacroix.
It's Lacroix.
And French, the French people tend to be Catholic. I say this from a French Catholic family.
Daniel Craig and Javier Bardem bonded intensely on the set of this movie over their shared love of rugby.
I love that. I love the idea that they just take Javier's horrible wig off and hang out. That's amazing.
Another trivia for you. In the 50 years of James Bond movies, now, of course, obviously, this is not taking Spectre or No Time to Die into consideration. This is the only second film in which Bond suffers a gunshot wound. Ashley.
Wow.
What is the other James Bond movie that he suffered? And you have seen it.
Oh, man, I almost swore. So loud.
Well, my later editing Jason, future Jason, thanks you. But isn't that insane that in 25 movies he's only been shot twice?
It's a Brosnan movie.
Incorrect. Just name a movie.
GoldenEye.
Incorrect. It's Thunderball, 1965.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Sure. I don't remember where, but I believe you.
Here's an amazing fun fact for Skyfall.
Okay.
Oh, I'm going to give you the other fun trivia, and then we're going to go to the amazing kind of softer one.
Give me the funny one.
Okay. Here's the other funny one. This is only the second time in James Bond history that James Bond is seen on film crying.
Is the first one at the death of his wife?
Correct. On Her Majesty's Secret Service, 1969.
At their wedding.
After she's killed in the car.
But she gets killed because they're driving away from their wedding.
Yes, it's on their wedding day.
Yeah.
All right. Now, here's the very touching and tribute James Bond thing that I think is really cool. Okay. And I did not know this until I did the research for this. Dame Judi Dench's house in this movie that they actually filmed that you see is the former home of legendary James Bond composer John Barry.
Oh, that's beautiful.
The filmmakers thought that this would be a loving tribute, especially in the movie that was coming in the 50th anniversary year, since he scored more James Bond movies than any other person. And he made the James Bond theme.
This is also the movie where we learn that M's husband, who we'd seen in Casino Royale, he's passed away in this movie. John Barry also composed the music for Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves?
I don't know about that. I cannot confirm nor deny that.
Okay.
Nor do I really care. But here's the thing. John Barry died before this film was released. He died in 2011.
Oh, that's sad.
But John Barry is the legendary legendary composer. I believe you were trying to tie it to a Kevin Costner movie. I believe you're getting them mixed up. I believe he might have composed Dances with Wolves.
I'll figure it out. Don't worry.
So, all right. Now we're ready to go into, I'm going to say it, the worst. Well,
Daniel Craig, James Bond movie.
This is the worst Daniel Craig, James Bond movie. Spectre, 2015 spy film, is the fourth Daniel Craig James Bond film, directed by Sam Mendes, who also directed Skyfall. Screenplay by John Logan, Neil Purvis, Robert Wade, and Jez Butterworth.
By the way, Jason, you were correct. It was Dances with Wolves. He also wrote a rejected score for The Incredibles.
That makes sense because The Incredibles sounds like a James Bond movie.
Yeah. So anyway, we can go back. All hail John Barry.
The budget for this movie was $300 million at the time, the most expensive James Bond movie of all time.
Too many dollars.
And the box office was only $880 million. Now, it didn't make the billion, but it still is one of the highest grossing James Bond films of all time.
Are we saying nice things first?
Let me explain the synopsis, please.
Yeah.
Because of a posthumous message from the previous M leads MI6 agent James Bond to carry out unauthorized missions across the world searching for a connection between all of his previous adventures, which leads him to discover a secret organization known as Spectre that has deep ties to his past.
They didn't learn from Quantum of Solace. Don't make this about the girl who just died.
Nope. Because the girl that died in this movie is M.
I know, but she's still a girl.
We're going to talk about positive things.
Yes.
This is quite possibly, if not the best, because I personally have a fondness for the Goldfinger opening. This is one of the best teaser openings of a James Bond film of all time.
Because this is my personal favorite.
It is a continuous, mostly one shot for the opening of the, for about 4 to 5 minutes.
And you can see the cuts if you're looking for them.
Let's say take.
You can see the take where they cut if you're looking for them, but it is so well done. And it is so beautiful. And setting it during Dia de los Muertos was such an intelligent choice, particularly with all the iconography that's coming. This is also one of the worst James Bond songs of all time.
It is one of the worst James Bond songs of all time. Let's still talk about positive. Yep. I love that we got to see Mr. White as played by, oh boy.
Yeah, you're pro Mr. White. I am anti Mr. White.
I think he's a good actor.
He's a good actor, but I don't think we should have seen the character after the first movie. I'm
trying to find him. Jesper Christensen is his name.
What a great name.
He's a great actor. I think that's really, I like the whole sequence where he goes into the house and and then Bond sort of gets his final nail in the coffin for Vesper, which is really nice. I like that we go to the Alps again to
I was going to say we get a snow adventure finally for Daniel Craig.
Well, it makes sense as well because Blofeld, who is later revealed to be in this movie, expertly cast by Christoph Waltz. I think he's a perfect casting choice for Blofeld.
Blofeld should have never come back, but he is well cast.
We'll talk about some other things with him.
He's got a kitty. We're pro that.
He's got a kitty. We're pro Spectre's coming. We're pro Spectre coming back.
We're pro Dave Bautista being cast. We just wish he'd gotten some more lines.
This movie is well shot, even though it's not Roger Deakins. All right, let's go to the weaknesses.
Oh no! Can I say oh my gosh, I don't remember her name. The Bond girl in this is amazing.
Swan.
No. The sexy Italian lady.
Oh, you mean the lady from The Matrix? Please stop. Ashley just knocked my iPad away.
I accidentally
Monica Bellucci.
Thank you so much. We are pro her because she's amazing. She's great in this part, even though there's absolutely no reason for Bond to interact with her whatsoever. And we are pro Bond having a love interest who is his age. And you know what? So is Daniel Craig. Daniel Craig spoke out very much in support of her casting. I'm very, very pleased.
She was almost previously cast in a Timothy Dalton movie, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm really glad that she got to come back, even though there's nothing for her to do except get naked.
And that's a perfect way to talk about the weaknesses of this film.
Most of it.
So this is why, to me, this is the weakest of the Daniel Craig films.
Yeah.
There is one. This is a modern construct of movies. Some of the other James Bond, a couple of the other Pierce Brosnan movies did this as well. I really dislike the James Bond trope of like, James Bond doesn't work in modern times anymore. And so we got to have a government committee talk about how James Bond doesn't work no more.
If James Bond doesn't work in modern times, we wouldn't have made the movie.
He wouldn't have made $1 billion.
Yeah.
Avengers level money.
Yeah.
If he didn't work in modern times. But so much of this movie is couched around an actor that I actually think is really good. Andrew Scott as the character of C.
Miscast in this role.
Completely miscast. And he's a great actor in His Dark Materials. He's a great actor in Sherlock.
He's a great actor in Fleabag.
He's a great actor in 1917.
Yeah.
But
there is a place for him in James Bond. C was not it, unfortunately.
His whole plotline of this movie is basically being like, hey, MI6, you guys aren't with the times.
His whole plotline is leading to the Ralph Fiennes joke, I guess we know what C stands for, which is a great line and a sick burn, don't get me wrong. but it's not enough justification for a character. And I'm happy he got paid.
And also, his whole plot line is to give something for Q, Moneypenny, and M to do in the final act. And I'm going to tell you this right now.
We don't need them in the field.
We don't need them in the final act.
We don't need Q. And I love Ben Whishaw, and I am pro putting him in things. We don't need him to fly to the Alps to yell at Bond in a fuzzy sweater.
We also need to talk, I'm going to mispronounce her name, Leia Seydoux.
Spell it.
Seydoux. Seydoux.
Yep.
Who is also going to be in No Time to Die.
She's great. She is not great in this part.
Well, she also... So in this movie, they give you this construct of the plot that James Bond falls in love with her just as much as he did with Vesper Lynn.
I hate it. I hate it so much.
Again, and this is a construct because we've watched these movies closely in a row. I do not buy that he loves this woman as much as Vesper Lynn.
They do. You understand. And it could also come down just to the actor chemistry. Like, Lea Seydoux is much younger.
Also, Vesper Lynn is referenced in this movie several times.
She runs in a reef.
Daniel Craig, James Bond.
Maybe it's just a difference of actor chemistry. I completely buy his romance with Vesper.
I do too. She earns his romance.
I do not buy for one single second that he falls in love with Swan, and I certainly do not believe that he is going to give up the only thing he's good at in his entire life for her.
Yes.
Which obviously he won't, because they're going to kill her in the first act of the next movie.
Now we also got to talk about Spectre. Now,
we love Spectre.
When they announced the title of this movie, because you and I knew each other.
Yes.
I believe this is the first James Bond movie we saw in theaters together.
Yes.
Yes. Because we didn't know each other when we saw Skyfall.
No.
I remember being so excited as a classic James Bond fan.
Oh, I remember, yeah.
I was so jazzed. I was like, that is perfect. You finally have the rights back. We're going to talk a little.
We went opening night.
We're going to talk about the film, the reason why they could finally use Spectre post the Sean Connery. We're going to talk about that. I just don't think they utilized it well enough, because the scene where they're in the secret desert base with Christoph Waltz when he's revealed as Blofeld, I don't even mind him being as Blofeld, even though I do agree with you that Blofeld should have never come back.
I mind him being James's secret brother, though.
Well, let's pause on that.
Apologies.
We're going to get there. The scene where like they all turn to him, I thought was really great in the desert scene.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that I'm like, if there is this secret organization that knows everything, I think they could have utilized it better in the movie, because it really doesn't make a difference to the movie until the third act.
It's also so clunky, and it was clunky in the same way that Quantum was clunky when he's basically doing the scavenger hunt and you get like clip art from all the previous movies.
Well, let's pause on that real quick, because I want to talk about, I want to talk about Blofeld being James's secret half-brother.
First of all, Christoph Waltz, wasted.
Yes. Now, again, I don't mind that Blofeld came back. I don't mind that. But I mind that, here's the problem. Skyfall had already did this. Here's the secret origin of James Bond. Because for a long time, everybody was like, James Bond is an orphan. Who cares about his parents?
Yeah.
And Skyfall confirms, they're like, he's Scottish. He comes from this place. And apparently now he's Catholic. So,
I mean, let's be honest. James Bond doesn't believe in God. James Bond is not religious.
No, agreed. But this movie decided, like, oh, yeah, that worked so well last time. Let's double down. Now James Bond has a secret brother.
But also, they kind of play this like James Bond has a bad dad.
Yes.
And there is a difference between being orphaned and having bad parents.
Mm-hmm.
Those are different traumas, different tragedies that tell you different things about your character. I don't believe that, I don't know what his name is, Mr. Bond, Daddy Bond, was a bad dad.
I don't remember. It doesn't
because
matter.
If he abandoned Blofeld, then he's a bad dad.
Yes.
And Secret Siblings is popping up all over the place right now. Like, Star Trek Discovery is doing it.
So is Secret Origins. Yeah.
I am not into Secret Siblings.
I'm not either.
Unless Secret Siblings is part of the, there are stories where it's all about Secret Siblings.
Because Secret Siblings are always the villain.
Wolverine and, Lumberjack. What's his freaking name?
I have no idea who you're talking
Sabretooth.
About.
Sabretooth.
Okay.
That's always been a part of those characters. Or it was like...
Not technically, but you're
very early.
It was introduced later on.
It's an early retcon.
Yeah.
It's been part of them cinematically.
For a long time, I thought Sabretooth was his dad.
Yes, for a long time. I just think if you're going to do Secret Siblings, it has to be... When you do it at the 11th hour, it just feels lazy to me. I'm tired of
it. And also, this is a modern movie construct. you talked about the clip art of him. They
treat you as an audience member like you're stupid, I think, when they do that.
I think, and I dislike rewriting movies, but I'm going to say
it's fine.
I'm going to say for this one, this movie should have ended in the desert at Spectre's secret volcano base.
I agree.
In Africa, coming back to London, mm-hmm. the whole last act of this movie does not work.
It's boring. And it's what makes the movie feel long.
It's boring. Madeline Swann becomes a hostage for the fourth time in the movie. Yeah. It's not fun watching Ralph Fiennes fight Andrew Scott. And also, the minute that they try to tell us that even Raul Silva was connected to...
No, hard pass.
I'm fine that saying that Quantum was a part of Spectre. Fine.
That actually kind of makes a little more sense for Quantum.
It's fine.
Yeah.
But Raul Silva is like a Goldfinger.
He's a rogue agent.
He's a rogue agent. Yeah. We explained what he was. To say that he was part of Spectre is lazy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. Also, these movies don't need to be tied together. We don't need a mythology or a continuity for James Bond.
No, I actually like when they reference other movies.
Yeah, but in one line, in lines of dialogue.
Exactly. In a throwaway line, even. Or you could say like when you fought Silva, or like when you took down so-and-so.
They did that back in the Pierce Brosnan. There's a Pierce Brosnan line or something, or there might be a Roger Moore line where they talk about...
I believe there's a Pierce Brosnan line where he references his wife.
Well, there's also another line, the specific one that I was going to talk about was there's a Pierce Brosnan line where somebody asks him if he's been to Jamaica before, which is where Dr. Noah said.
And he goes
once or twice.
Yes. Yeah.
Which is just like,
I think that's Pierce Brosnan.
That's all you need.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all you need.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Felix Leiter in one of the Timothy Dalton movies mentions the Contessa.
Yes, that's what I was thinking of. I'm so sorry.
So, but this... like making it a singular storyline. And that is my one reticence for No Time to Die. We'll talk about that in a second. Any other negatives on... But Ashley, do you agree with me that this is the worst of the Daniel Craig films?
I do, yes.
Okay.
And I will say that anyone who's doubting them, watch all four
Yep.
Over a couple days. Trust your professors on this one.
There were many times... This... And I think we said this as we were watching this. Spectre is a modern... telling of like the goofy 70s James Bond film where they try to do the goofy 70s stuff, but they try to be like, but here's the reason it's happening. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work.
When you watch them together, you will come out thinking Quantum of Solace is not as bad as I thought.
Yes.
And Spectre is worse than I thought.
Yes, that was our as well, because I think the collective reasoning is that Quantum of Solace is automatically the worst one. And I disagree.
And it's not.
I disagree with that. So here's some fun facts.
Okay.
In directing Skyfall and Spectre, Sam Mendes became the first director to oversee two successive Bond films since John Glenn directed five James Bond films in a row, ending with License to Kill in 1989.
Hey, we love that one.
Christopher Nolan was in serious contention to direct Spectre until Sam Mendes decided to do it again.
You know what? At the time, I would have been excited by this. Now, I don't think I need a Christopher Nolan James Bond movie.
I kind of agree with that. The film's usage of the Spectre organization and its characters marked the end of a long-standing litigation between Eon Productions and producer Kevin McClory, who sued James Bond creator and Ian Fleming, we talked about this a little bit before, in 1961, claiming ownership over elements of the novel Thunderball.
Yep.
And in an out-of-court settlement 2 years later, he was awarded the novel's film rights, including Spectre and all of its appropriate characters, which is why Blofeld and Spectre disappear from the Eon films. Now, McClory died in 2006, and it wasn't until 2013 that MGM and the McClory estate formally settled the issue, allowing MGM to acquire the full copyright to film rights and the concept of Spectre.
Yeah, because his children wanted that payout.
Yep. It was in this movie that the acronym of Spectre was... ignored. We're going to talk about that in just a second.
Are you going to make me guess what Spectre stands for?
Oh, yes.
Oh, boy.
You want to do it right now? Here we go. Ashley, in the... So there are different meanings.
Like S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes. Ian Fleming has a meaning for Spectre.
We're talking about the movie, so why don't we go with the movie acronym?
Okay. What? There are two.
Oh, boy.
There are two definitions in the movie. I'm willing to accept any definition of Spectre.
Don't
because
worry.
There are three of them.
I'm not going to get it.
Ashley, what do you think Spectre stands for?
Special people eating crustaceans together really exceptionally.
I'm sorry, but you got it wrong immediately with the S.
Secret.
They use the S. All right, here are the three different meanings of Spectre. Spectre in the original James Bond films, mm-hmm. but the Sean Connery ones, means special executive for counterintelligence, terrorism, revenge, and extortion.
Never would have got him.
And in a later movie, it is said the special executor for counterintelligence, terrorism, revenge, and extortion. And James Bond creator Ian Fleming originally meant the acronym as the special executive for terrorism, revenge, and extortion.
Ah, so they're doing that BS thing of counting S and P as part of one word.
Now, Ashley, I would love you to take a guess here. This uh-huh. movie came out, this movie was filmed in 2014 to 2015. Mm-hmm. Think about the actors of the time, the older character actors of the time. Christoph Waltz was not the first choice for this role. Who do you think they went to an actor right out the gate?
Brian Cox.
Not a terrible choice. He would have been an interesting choice.
Mm-hmm.
No, they actually went to Gary Oldman as their first choice for Urs Starvald Blofeld. Not a terrible choice.
Not a great choice, though.
I don't know. I think he might have been a better choice than Christoph Waltz, because the reason he said no...
Waltz was hot, though, at that time.
He was. The reason why he said no is because he didn't want to commit to the film for 6 months.
Fair, I guess.
So, and then because we are big fans of Miss Moneypenny, we're ending this with a piece of Moneypenny trivia.
Yay, Naomi Harris.
Ashley, I'm gonna make this a trivia question. No, I'm not asking her name.
Okay.
This is the first James Bond movie to ever reveal something about Miss Moneypenny.
Is it her first name?
Nope.
Or is it that she has a boyfriend?
Nope. This is the first James Bond movie to show something about Miss Moneypenny. What do you think this is the first James Bond movie to ever show about Miss Moneypenny?
Her nude? I don't know.
Her home.
Oh,
we see her home in three different scenes in this movie. It has never been seen ever in a James
Bond
film.
Yes, because they make a big deal about the fact that she has a boyfriend.
Yes, and the boyfriend is there.
And she makes fun of... one of the best scenes in this movie is where she makes fun of James Bond's apartment.
Yep.
She's like, did you just move in? And he's like, I've been here for, he says like 5 years. Cause it's mm-hmm. like a TV on the floor.
Cause he's, of course.
Which is exactly the way James Bond would live.
He's jet setting. All right. Let's move on into No Time to Die.
No Time to Die.
And we already know what the song sounds like for that one. It's not a great one. I'm sorry.
No, it's not.
All right. So there are going to be some names in this that are very difficult for me to say. I apologize.
It's okay.
For
we're all just doing our best.
My Western American dumb tongue. But here it is. All right. No Time to Die is going to be released sometime in 2021. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, if everything works out. I don't know. At the time of this recording, it's slated for April.
We're hoping it's April.
We're hoping it's April. It was April of last year. Wow.
Yep.
It's directed by Cary Fukunaga. It has a screenplay by Neil Purvis, Robert Wade, Cary Fukunaga, mm-hmm. and Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
We like all of those names. We're hopeful.
Yes. Why would people know Phoebe Waller-Bridge?
She's Fleabag. She's Andrew Scott's love interest.
Yes.
In that.
It has a budget of $250 million, so a little bit less than Spectre. I'm going to predict that it's going to make $5 billion. And
I mean, it's probably gonna make about $16 million if it's gonna come
synopsis,
out in April.
The official synopsis, as we have not seen this movie, is 5 years after the capture of Urs Starvald Blofeld. 5 years after Spectre.
What?
James Bond has left active service. He is approached by Felix Leiter, his friend and CIA officer, who enlists his help in the search of Valdo Obruchev, a missing scientist. When it becomes apparent that Obruchev has been abducted, Bond must confront a villain whose schemes could see the deaths of millions. So,
I will say this, based on the synopsis and the trailer,
yep.
It does seem like we are finally going to get more than two scenes with Felix Leiter.
Yep.
For which I am very excited.
It appears like he's a significant part of this movie.
Yeah, look, it only took him leading a television show for people to be like, Jeffrey Wright's a really good actor.
Yep. All right, we have some fun facts about this movie.
Great.
In February of 2018, Danny Boyle was originally established as the front runner
for the
directing position of this movie. Why would people know Danny Boyle, Ashley?
Trainspotting?
Correct.
He's done a bunch of other stuff, but that was his big breakout.
Cary Fukunaga was announced as the new director in September of 2018. He becomes the first American to ever direct a James Bond film. Also, he is the first director in James Bond history to receive a writing credit.
What would people know Cary from?
True Detective.
There you go. He is responsible for a lot of very iconic
season one.
Shots.
Season one.
Yeah, that season.
He worked a little bit on season two.
That 7-minute shot.
Now, Phoebe Waller-Bridge provided a script polish, an on-set script polish in April of 2019. She was specifically picked by Daniel Craig to revise the dialogue, work on character development, and to add humor to the script. Now,
which I was going to say, that basically means she's there to change the lines and put in jokes.
There's two things we've got to talk about here. And this is a little bit of inside baseball in Hollywood, if you want to know it. Fun fact, Waller-Bridge is the second female screenwriter ever in James Bond history because Johanna Harwood co-wrote Dr. No and From Russia with Love. Two, Daniel Craig is a major star now.
Yep.
Thanks to James Bond. Many A-list Hollywood screenwriters have a clause in their contract that at any time during the production, if they do not feel the script is strong enough, they can call in a screenwriter of their choosing. Mm-hmm. I do not know this for certain, but I would bet that Phoebe Waller-Bridge, because she won all those Emmys and stuff like that, this is where Daniel Craig pulled in Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Yeah, I would assume so.
So Daniel Craig on the set of this movie did not like the script that much, apparently, or wanted it to be funnier. So take that as you will.
Well, or maybe he wanted it to be more grounded. Like, one thing that Phoebe Waller-Bridge does really well is she writes dialogue the way people talk.
That's fair.
I'm super interested to see
what
if we watch this movie and you can see her. I'm not against it.
No, I'm not either. I'm just noting.
But it's very different from Fleabag.
I'm just noting that that is something to note, that Daniel Craig was like, ding, ding. Maybe there was some Quantum of Solace flashbacks here or something like that. I don't know. Interesting. I'm very excited for this movie. I just say I'm excited for it.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
With this film, Daniel Craig will become the third oldest actor to ever play James Bond. Roger Moore was aged 57 with A View to a Kill in 1985. Sean Connery was 53 when he played James Bond in Never Say Never Again. Now, that was not an official James Bond movie, but we're still going to count it. Daniel Craig will be 52 if this movie releases this year. He's 52
so he was
in this
50,
year.
50, 51 when he shot it.
Yes. And for the rest, we'll have to see. Now, really quickly, lightning round, Ashley.
Yep.
Without counting Time to Die, I want to hear quick. Let's go through these choices. Lightning round style. Best Daniel Craig James Bond film. Go.
Skyfall.
For me, it is Casino Royale. Worst Daniel Craig James Bond movie.
Spectre.
It's Spectre for me as well. Best Daniel Craig era villain.
Le Chief.
I think it's Silva. I think it's Silva from Skyfall. Yeah. This to me, it could go either way. What is the best Daniel Craig era James Bond song?
It's a tie.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Between Skyfall and Casino Skyfall and You Know My Name.
You Know My Name. I think it's You Know My Name by Chris Cornell.
R.I.P. Chris Cornell.
I like rocking James Bond songs.
Yeah.
So, and that's it.
Huh? Best Bond girl.
Oh.
And we can table Vesper if you want.
It has to be Vesper.
It has to be Vesper.
It has to be. Well, technically, the Bond girl in Skyfall is M. So it's a tie.
No, it's Eve. Because they sleep together when she goes to help him out in Mackay.
Or M.
Or Macau.
It's M, M. We don't know what's happening in that Scottish castle.
Don't you dare. That was like a big thing online where people were like, he loves her. And I was like, yeah, like his mama.
All right. Let's move on to recommended reading.
Okay. Which is where if you go to geekhistorylesson.com/recommended reading, we are going to have a bunch of cool suggestions about things you can read. And I would guess things you can watch.
A lot of this is the same old. There's the complete James Bond collection on Blu-ray. And then, of course, we have Casino Royale and Skyfall. Mm-hmm. So it's just go watch the movies. They're excellent.
Yeah, they are excellent.
And now to the teaching tweet.
Where in 140 characters or less, Professor Jason very begrudgingly is going to sum up everything that we just chatted about when it comes to James Bond.
Yes. Bond has always been a bruiser that hides his anger and violence in a layer of sophistication. That's why Daniel Craig was an excellent Bond.
Do you know that Daniel Craig is considered a men's fashion icon?
His suits rock, so I'd say yes. He's well dressed in a lot of these. Even his tan suit in Quantum of Solace is great.
Oh, that's a great suit. I was gonna say, do you have a favorite Daniel Craig's look? I know you're not like a fashion guy.
It's hard to remember them off the top of my head.
That's fine. Not the blue bathing suit?
No, it's he has a gray suit in Skyfall that is pretty amazing.
I know the one that you are talking about.
It's the one that he runs down the street in.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Next. Now we're going to the honor roll, where if you go to Apple Podcasts and you leave us a 5-star review, thanks for helping to bump us in that algorithm. We're going to read whatever you write on the air. Ashley, who's joining the honor roll this week?
Today, Geeks Are People 2 is joining the honor roll. They have a very long review. We're going to read all of it. So we're only inducting one person. And they were a little bit pushing the idea that if you write 5 stars, we'll read anything that you say. They're mostly very nice,
hey,
though.
That is the deal we make. They can write whatever they want. So
they said, holy guacamole, this is good.
I like that, holy guacamole.
Aloha. I have been listening to YouTube for quite a while and finally got off my okole. Don't know what that means. Sorry if I mispronounced it. To write a review. Amazing. Love the research that goes into the show, and I can literally hear the addiction you both have for the subject matter.
Thank you.
Recently took 2 road trips, Seattle to Mount Rushmore and Seattle to the Redwoods, Vegas, Four Corners, New Mexico, and back.
That's some drives.
You two were the best road trip companions ever. Ah. Listen to old and new episodes, and I always learn something new. Only one small tiny critique. Oh. Jason, whenever Ashley's teaching a lesson, please let her finish her paragraphs.
Hey, hold on. What? What's this? Sorry, I have to interrupt you.
Sometimes that you're chomping at the bit to toss in a tidbit of info or add a voice. Ugh, please retire text.
Hey, what was this? What?
The only negative thing I've ever heard written about text. Otherwise, cannot say enough great things about the show. I have to confess, the years I've listened to you two, I hadn't thought about donating to Patreon, but I listened to the other shows that aren't as quote-unquote prepared. I began to realize the work that you two put in, so now I'm a proud Patreon supporter!
Oh, thank you.
I 100% wholeheartedly suggest anyone listening donate support. I wish I could give more, but because of COVID and furloughs, I am now a $5 per month patron. That means you're getting Geekish Lesson Extra, which is some of the best bang for your buck.
It is the best bang.
Come on, people, for the price of 1 grande mocha latte. Hey, I like your coffee taste. Per month or less than the cost of a giant inflatable pickle on Amazon. That's a real thing, by the way. You too can keep Geek History Lesson up and running. Thank you, Ashley and Jason. How about a lesson on Phantom Stranger or a 2-parter on the Legion of Superheroes?
Both excellent choices.
Thank you, Geeks Are People Too. We're just yanking your chain about the criticisms. All criticisms are welcome as long as they are respectful, and Geeks Are People Too is very respectful.
I love Geeks Are Other People Too.
Geeks Are People Too.
Geeks Are People Too. I love that it started like super positive, like with the road trip.
It was a sandwich. It was a critique sandwich.
I was going to say that they were a great road trip companion, except when they didn't stop at that rest stop, and they know what it is. And then went into criticism and then came back around.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Like a road trip.
Yes, in a lot of ways.
But in terms of your comments of retiring tech, I think there's only one thing that can be said on that.
Hello, you've reached Moneypenny.
Ah, it's Tex Willerman here.
From the American branch.
My phone's still ringing. Hold on.
It must be on your end because I've already picked up my telephone.
I can't figure this out. But I just wanted to be MI6.
Yes, sir. This is a private line. Only way you can call us.
I have my voice. I know your man, Felix Leiter. I'm just going to say,
Felix Leiter is your man.
Look, I wanted to call England because I wanted to tell you that I ain't going nowhere. Tex Willerman is here to stay. You got that straight?
Well, thank you. We had no doubts.
By the way, stop sending your fancy men over to my country.
I will let you know that James Bond is going to America, I believe, twice.
Too many times. Keep his fanciness out of there.
Keep yourself girded for James Bond in New York.
Bye-bye. Stay well, kisses.
Bye.
Let's move on. But there you go, Geeks Are Other People Too. Welcome into the Teacher's Lounge, where Professor Mendez is sharing his student film about plastic bags.
And what does he teach?
Videography. By the way, that was that's a deep cut film reference, if anybody gets that. Just think about it. Professor Mendez. All right, we're going to move on. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast everywhere that you can listen. And it's on iTunes. It's on SoundCloud. It's everywhere you can put in your ear holes, man. And if you got a James Bond fan in your life, tell them about this podcast. Have them join in on the fun and go on road trips with you, like our other listener there. That's so great. We're going to move very quickly through this. Ashley, don't forget about the Patreon over at patreon.com/Jobin, where we're going to talk about what should the James Bond franchise do next. You can support the podcast very similar there for less than a price of a mocha. And you can follow Ashley on Twitter and Instagram at Ashley V. Robinson. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Jawin, J-A-W-I-I-N. Ashley, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
For the hashtag stick around, the final part where we make sure they stick through the plugs.
Mm-hmm.
I have a theory about Daniel Craig's James Bond.
That he's handsome? That he's hot?
I don't think he's very good looking. But that's just me. Daniel, no offense. I think you're a great actor. But he's hot. I'm just, I don't think you're very attractive. Ashley.
Yeah.
When the time that Casino Royale was made and all of James Bond's, you know, you can see the Daniel Craig franchise evolve. Mm-hmm. And you can see how it evolves based on the movie industry.
Mm-hmm.
Is Daniel Craig the first superhero James Bond?
Yes, absolutely.
Because I brought that up because, like, he, you know, he has the abs. He's so cut. They're very concerned about how he looks.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell, like, how the villains are reactive to Marvel films. And also, like, you know, yeah, he has to do that 6-hour workout that every actor hates.
Yes, but they are paid a lot of money to do it, so I'm not here for them complaining about it.
Okay. But you agree with my theory that Daniel Craig is the first superhero James Bond?
Yes, he's definitely reactive to The Dark Knight, to Iron Man, and to that genre emerging into popularity. And,
well, you can tell Casino Royale is definitely inspired by Batman Begins, which came out in the previous year.
Yeah, I think Daniel Craig James Bond is also reactive to one of your favorite franchises of all time, Mission Impossible, and the Bourne Identity. More than, I think, the Brosnan Bond.
I agree.
I think that's for the better because I love a movie that pretends to be grounded, but is obviously not grounded. But I like the grit that his movies have.
Yeah, the Brosnan films are very much like Roger Moore pastiches.
Yes, yeah. They're big, dumb fun.
Yep. All right, everybody. We gave you a super long geek history lesson out there. So thank you so much for listening. I am Jason, love a good M, Inman.
I am Ashley Victoria Robinson. And Professor Jason, would you please dismiss the class?
Class is dismissed. I don't know what that was. Just go with it.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's fine. It's all right.
Okay, bye.